All right, Alexander, let's talk about the military situation in Ukraine. What is happening on the front lines? And then we can talk maybe we can talk a bit about what's happening with the conference in Armenia. Maybe we can talk about what's happening around Russia. There's a big conference in Armenia taking place to try and push Armenia closer to Europe and to NATO. And then we have an interesting CNN article which talks about how European intelligence is playing up assassination attempts on Putin and security around Putin. They talk about Valdai and what happened there. So we can touch on these things as well. But let's start things off with the military situation on the ground, on the front lines.
Well, the military situation can be described in some ways very simply, which is that we are about a month in now into the Russian offensive. The way the war works, and it's been the consistent pattern in 24, no, 2024 and 2025 and 2026 is following the identical pattern, is that there's a very quiet period, or a quieter period in late winter, when the Russians reorganize their forces, they re-equip, they bring in new people who have been training back in Russia, they refit them, they work out new tactics, new strategies. There's always then a narrative, heavily promoted, mostly by the British, by the way, about how the war is supposedly in stalemate and all of that. Then around April, the Russians begin to go on the offensive. The offensive starts relatively slowly because the Russians are moving towards positions which the Ukrainians have fortified over several years, by the way. Then the Russians break through those fortifications. We then start to see a period of much more rapid movement from about July, August, September. A series of places fall. And then gradually things begin to slow down again towards the winter. This year is following it the identical pattern. So the Russians have been conducting an offensive. It's an offensive that's going on right across the front lines in Zaporozhye region, up in the north, in Sumy and Kharkiv regions, in Donbass. The main focus of the offensive up to now has been the city of Konstantinivka, which is one of the fortress towns along the last fortified line that the Ukrainians have in Donbass. Starts with Slavyansk in the north, then Kramatorsk, then Druzhivka, then Konstantinivka is the most southern of these. The Russians reached that front line, this line of cities, basically at the end of last year, following the fall of Pokrovsk. They're now in a position to go round it. There's a big battle underway for Konstantinivka. The Western media, up to now, has mostly ignored this battle. But yesterday, or the day before yesterday, first article appeared in Reuters, basically preparing the Western public for the fact that Konstantinivka is about to fall. Konstantinivka is the biggest town that the Russians will have captured, by the way, to my knowledge, since the capture of Severodonetsk in 2022. Just say it's an important place. If it falls, we're going to start to see the other towns, the other Donbass towns, Druzhivka, Kramatorsk, Slavyansk, they're going to start to fall like a row of dominoes. And the reports speak of the Russians now controlling the high-rise area in Konstantinivka, the factory district, and being very close to establishing a cauldron around the Ukrainian troops there. So that's the most important battle, just as we've had, you know, the Battle of Bakhmut, one of the big sieges, just as we've had Avdiivka, another very big siege, just as we have Toretsk, all of these places. This winter, it's been Konstantinivka, and that battle is coming to an end.
What about the north, like Sumy and in those areas, Kharkiv?
This is a very, an area of the war which I personally have the greatest trouble understanding, because the Russians over the last few months have been very, very busy there. Now, the Ukrainians don't have any troops in this region. By the way, neither do the Russians. The entire operations in northern Kharkiv and Sumy region are done by a single Russian group of forces north, which is believed to number in total around 70,000 men. Now, about of those, perhaps 10,000 are infantry. And yet, you know, they've been expanding significantly their area of control throughout Kharkiv and Sumy region. And it's difficult to understand exactly what the Russians are doing here. Now, there's one view, which is the official Russian view, which is that all that the Russians are doing is establishing a buffer zone along their border. They don't want any more attacks, Ukrainian invasions of their own territory, of pre-2014 Russia. They don't want any more Ukrainian attacks into Belgorod, any more Ukrainian attacks into Kursk region, that they're intent on preventing that happening. And so they're capturing all of these places in Kharkiv and Sumy region. The problem with this is that if you especially look at the situation in Sumy region, it does increasingly look as if the Russians have some ultimate objective to take the regional capital, which is Sumy itself. And if we're talking about Kharkiv region, it also seems as if all of these Russian moves there are coordinated with the fighting in the area of Kupiansk. Remember Kupiansk? We heard an awful lot about Kupiansk. That's not, the Kupiansk battles are not being carried out by group of forces north. It's another Russian force entirely. I don't think anybody any longer seriously disputes that the Russians do actually have secure control of Kupiansk, both on the west and east of the Oskol River. And the Russians seem to be pushing westwards and northwards from there. Now, to me, what this looks like is perhaps not so much preparation of a buffer zone exactly, but preparation for some kind of, jumping off place, basically a base area for, well, I can only guess, an attack ultimately on Kiev. If you're going to attack Kiev and do so successfully, you need to control Sumy and probably Kharkiv. And the Russians have also been very busy in the north in Belarus. They've been apparently establishing a large network of things in Belarus. This is what I'm guessing, what I think is going to happen. This year, the focus is on Donbass and on Zaporozhye. If after these regions have been captured, we don't have a peace settlement, and the peace settlement cannot happen, the Russians have made this clear with Zelensky as leader of Ukraine, then in 2027, the focus is Odessa in the south, Kiev in the north.
So all the cool kids of Europe, Alexander, not only Europe, Mark Carney as well, Keir Starmer, all the EU officials, all the leaders of the European Union member states, they've all descended onto Armenia.
Yeah,
they're looking to boost up Pashinyan because he has elections, I believe, in early June.
Yeah.
And so he's looking for some support there so he can remain in power. Pashinyan is moving towards NATO and the EU. Yeah. He has not made a secret of that.
No.
But Zelensky, in his first statement, said that the drones are going to perhaps threaten the May 9th Victory Day parade.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
what do you think about his statements, his threats?
Let's first talk about Armenia, because, of course, this is now the big hope. Georgia has been a disappointment. The Georgian government there seems to be securely in power.
They're not going to give up, though, on Georgia.
Oh, no, they're not going to give up. But for the moment,
yeah.
I mean, things seem to be stable there. Over the last couple of weeks, Aliyev in Azerbaijan has been trying to stabilize relations with the Russians. Apparently, he's been told to do this by Erdogan. And the Russians have been tightening control of the pipelines, and Aliyev can't survive in power if oil exports from Azerbaijan are fully closed. And for that reason, he's sort of dialed down the rhetoric. So Armenia now is the big hope. Win over, get Pashinyan re-elected, get Pashinyan to take Armenia fully out of the Russian orbit, the Eurasian Union, the Eurasian Economic Union, the Collective Security Treaty Organization, all of those things. There is one overwhelming problem, and that is that Armenia, yes, has achieved actually quite good economic performance over the last couple of years. But it's done so entirely on the back of increased trade with Russia. So pulling out of the Eurasian Economic Union is going to come with very, very significant cost. So Pashinyan was in Moscow a few weeks ago, and he tried to get Putin to agree that if Armenia moves closer to the West, Armenia can still remain part of the Eurasian Economic Union. And Putin told him flat out, no way. I mean, that it's actually on television. He said to Pashinyan, you have to make a choice. It's either one or the other. You can't ride both horses at the same time. So obviously, in that kind of situation, Pashinyan, we both know, he's going to go with the West. But he's going to go with the West at the time when there is an economic crisis, likely in the West because of the situation with Iran, when Armenia's own relations with Iran are looking very difficult, and when he's going to be up against the Russians. As so often happens with these very complicated strategies that the West comes up with, the risk they're running is that Armenia won't become a strategic asset against the Russians. It'll become another strategic liability for the West. So, yes, they have all of these complicated strategies with Armenia. It is a disaster for Armenia and the Armenian people how this is shaping up. But I don't really think this is going to work. And I don't think the Russians are too worried about it. So I do want to say that. Uh-huh. Now, about destabilizing the situation inside Russia and threatening the 9th of May parade, I want to say something first about the 9th of May parade. It's scaled down this year. People are linking that to the drone attacks. Actually, it was a decision made in 2022 that whilst the special military operation was underway, the Russians would scale down significantly the Victory Day celebrations. In 2022, there was a lot of domestic criticism when the May 9th parade was on the usual enormous scale. And the Russian Defense Ministry promised that from then thereon, it would be scaled down whilst the war was underway. And the exception was last year, because last year was, I think it was the 80th anniversary. 80th anniversary.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was last year. This year, it's back to scaling it down. I think that the Russians will make absolutely sure that no Ukrainian drones are able to penetrate and interfere with the Victory Day celebrations. So I don't myself think that this is going to be actually a problem. Other attempts at destabilization are very real. You mentioned this article in CNN, which comes closer, I think, from what you've told me.
Yeah, let me read you.
Yeah.
Let me read you the title. Unsettled Kremlin tightens security around Putin amid assassination and coup fears. Intel report says the Intel report, Alexander, is from European Intel. CNN says in the article they haven't been able to confirm any of the of the intel that was presented to them. European intelligence is actually, according to CNN, they're revealing their intelligence findings and they're passing it out to the media. So obviously this is a propaganda campaign. But basically, just to fill you in on what CNN is saying, and then you can comment and analyze it. You know, CNN is basically saying that that the Russian economy is weak. We've done a show on the Russian economy. That Putin is facing certain coup fears. It actually says that Shoigu, that's the actual person they name, Shoigu may be the person that is going to try to remove Putin. That's what the article is stating. And the assassination attempts and the successful assassinations of various military officials and generals has caused quite a lot of anger and chaos in the Kremlin. And it specifically focuses on the article, the European Intel focuses on Valdai and the events that took place against Valdai, and actually mentions that that the Kremlin and Kremlin security does not want Putin to go to Valdai anymore because of what happened there.
Right. There's a lot of things here to say. First of all, the idea of Shoigu mounting a coup against Putin or organizing a coup against Putin is complete an absolute fantasy.
It's got his photo right there.
I know. I mean, it is an absurd idea. I mean, it's probably connected to the fact that he was defense minister at one time and holds a military rank, though recently he's reverted to civilian dress. But Shoigu is in no position to mount a coup against Putin. And there is no sign that he has the slightest desire to do so. I mean, he is a loyalist through and through. And to say it straightforwardly, I mean, Shoigu has lots of critics in Russia. Some of them unfair, in my opinion. But anyway, there are critics. I mean, I just don't think he has the kind of, what would have remotely the kind of support to carry out a coup. And indeed, the whole idea of a coup in Russia is a complete fantasy altogether. Now, about the economic situation, as you rightly say, we've done a program about it. As we discussed, the situation has turned out to be stable. People were putting too much weight on the fact that there was a shock GDP decline in January. But over February and March, that has appeared to be reversed. In fact, the situation in the economy appears to be stable. And we did not get, in the end, a significant contraction in Russia in the first quarter. The overall contraction was 0.3%, which is statistically insignificant. So the economic and budgetary pressures the people are talking about do not exist. The assassination concern, however, is a very real one. And here I have no doubt that the Kremlin is taking increasing precautions. But then Putin himself revealed some months ago, last year in fact, that because of concerns about potential attempts by the Ukrainians to assassinate him. And there's been more than one. Budanov, chief of Ukrainian military intelligence, actually said that the Ukrainians have made several attempts to assassinate Putin. We don't know about all of them, but one of them we can guess was a drone attack that they did on the Kremlin, carried out on the Kremlin, I believe in 2023, which seemed to be targeting Putin's office in the Senate building. And the other, obviously, was the Valdai attack. And from what you tell me, this CNN article comes very close, finally, to acknowledging that the Valdai attack was an assassination attempt. Anyway, the Russians
freaked them out. That's what it's basically.
Absolutely.
That's the conclusion that it makes.
Yeah.
It freaked them out.
Well, the point is this. Since the start of the special military operation, because of these threats of assassination attempts, Putin himself acknowledged in a long interview he gave a couple of months ago, last year, that he has been confined to the Kremlin, that he's spending all his time now in the Kremlin, in his office in the Kremlin, and in the apartment there, and that he has not been going out as much around the country as he previously did. In other words, these precautions predate Valdai. And for the record, I don't believe he was in Valdai at the time when the attack on Valdai took place. My understanding, in fact, I'm confident about this, is that though Trump and the West probably believed he was in Valdai, and the Ukrainians certainly assumed that he was, in fact, he was in the Kremlin.
Yeah, well, that Valdai incident seems to have shaken up a lot of things in the Kremlin and with Putin. That seems to be an inflection point
And it was an inflection point. Yeah. And the reason it was an inflection point, and you've discussed this especially extensively and very correctly, the reason it was an inflection point was because certainly the Ukrainians tried it. The CIA was clearly involved. But a third person was involved, and that was Donald Trump. Donald Trump had this conversation with Putin, told Putin, stay where you are. I'm about to speak to Zelensky, and I will come back to you. And then, of course, whilst that was going on, the attack on Valdai took place, and that seems to have confirmed to many, many people in Moscow that Donald Trump himself was directly implicated. The president of the United States, the man with whom Putin holds all these friendly conversations, that he was directly involved in an attempt to assassinate Putin. And this, after this pattern that the Trump administration has established of conducting decapitation strikes around the world. So that did come as a massive shock, and it has had a big effect on the mood in Moscow and in terms of the whole attitudes towards relations with the Americans. It has led to criticism of Putin, which we've discussed in several programs, which undoubtedly is there. Oh, you only need to read Medvedev to see that it is there. It's led to a significant reduction in contacts between Putin and Trump. I mean, they've spoken 11 times since Trump was inaugurated, but only twice on the phone this year. And the first call was extremely contentious, apparently. So, and it's also led to the Russians basically now saying that negotiations over Ukraine are simply not, are not, there's no point in them. So Valdai was an inflection point for that reason. And that has had an effect, a political effect in Moscow, of that That is indisputable.
Did Trump say he was going to speak with Zelensky or the Europeans, or were the Europeans at the White House? I forget exactly the sequence of events.
I forget.
Yeah. Anyway, he was going to come. Yeah,
really,
you're right.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. He told
Putin,
stay there.
Stay there. Remain by the phone. I will call you back shortly.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. So let me read you my final point. Let me read you the last paragraph of the CNN article, because you have to go all the way down to the end of the article to figure out exactly what's going on here. So the final paragraph of this article says, it is rare for Western intelligence, they're referring to the European intelligence that handed them this report, it is rare for Western intelligence agencies to leak detailed accounts of confidential deliberations by hostile actors, likely obtained from human or electronic sources, both of which risk compromise if exposed. Yet, its release may reflect a bid by European officials to seize upon a hope that critics have argued has long been their sole strategy to defeat Russia in Ukraine, to wait for its internal collapse. I think that article gives it all away. That is, and rightly so, actually, when you put yourself in their shoes, the best strategy they have to win is to push for, to hope for, to instigate some sort of an internal collapse. It makes perfect sense. And I wouldn't be surprised if the U.S., if the Trump administration, along with the Europeans and Zelensky, decided before Baldai, the way that we can win this is to try and get an internal collapse, much in the same way that they said the way that we're going to deal with Venezuela is to kidnap Maduro.
Yeah.
The way we're going to defeat Iran is to decapitate the top officials, the supreme leader. I wouldn't be shocked or surprised. I'm not saying I have information or I know this happened, but I would not be surprised if they took the same approach with Russia, the Europeans, the United States, and Zelensky. And they said, look, we're not going to win this any other way. The only way we're going to win this is if we cause some sort of an internal collapse. I mean, what do you think of the last paragraph from CNN and everything?
Well, I think, Alex, we're being a little bit disingenuous, because the reality is you have been saying absolutely correctly, and I've been saying too, ever since we started this whole affair back in 2022, that the objective was an internal collapse in Russia. The entire reason there's been a war is in order to trigger an internal collapse.
True,
in Russia.
But we have
regime
the war, we have
Russia.
The fighting, but we now, have the front lines, now, we have all
exactly,
these things.
Yeah. Exactly, but now, of course, we've gone from a situation in February 2022 when the objective was to engineer an internal collapse using the war, in other words, the sanctions, all of the things that we've been talking about, crushing the Russian economy, all of those things. The intention was to trigger a crisis that would lead to an internal collapse. We've now gone all full circle so that the only way to resolve the crisis that we created in order to achieve a internal collapse in Russia, the only way we can resolve that is by having an internal collapse in Russia. So what began as the objective has now become the hope. In fact, the sole hope. I think those are the words that you just read to me. It's sole hope. So we are now gambling.
Sole strategy, sorry. Sole strategy to defeat Russia
is to try and somehow engineer a domestic crisis there. Well, it's not going to happen. certainly not in the way that they think it is. And if that is their sole strategy, then what they really need to do is to give up. Because, as I said, they're now making what was their objective, it's now become their strategy. I mean, it tells you how messed up these people now are.
Well, Hormuz was open, Alexander.
Yeah.
And now all we're talking about is how to get it reopen. It was open. It was free.
Yeah.
And now everything is about opening Hormuz and removing Iran's toll. So, I mean, it's the same thing, right? It's the same exact thing as to what was going on with Iran. You see it now with this article about Russia.
Yeah.
So okay, that was an interesting article from CNN and European intelligence, if there is such a thing. That's what they're passing around.
Well, I'm going to make a guess.
Defeat Russia.
I'm going to make a guess
for internal collapse. It says.
Exactly. Wait for internal. I'm going to make a guess. That's British intelligence, by the way. I mean, that has very much the feel of British intelligence about it. Well, there it is. It's their sole strategy. It's nice to it's interesting to know that actually, that they have no other that even they now acknowledge to themselves that there is no other way of winning this thing other than waiting or trying, no doubt, to help and bring about some kind of internal collapse in Russia. To repeat again, if after 4 years it hasn't happened, it's not going to happen now.
Well, I would say they're not waiting. I think they are actively trying to get something going.
Trying.
There's no doubt about
that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to get that that collapse. Oh, they mentioned Prigozhin and all of that stuff as well, and how close they were.
Of course they did. Absolutely understandable, because again, I mean, going back to our discussions of the Prigozhin affair as it was taking place, there's no doubt they had a hand in it.
Yeah, very true. All right, we will end the video there. The direct. Yep. Do you have something else to say? Or?
No. I've got nothing further.
Okay. The very nature of such intelligence makes some of the details hard to verify. CNN has approached the Kremlin for comment. Yeah, so all the intelligence that they got, CNN can't verify any of it. All right, we will end the video there at theduran.locals.com. We are on Rumble and X and Telegram. We are also on Substack. Go to Duran Shop, pick up some merch, like this video, share this video, subscribe to this channel. Take care.